Welcome to Business Beyond Borders, the go-to podcast for CPA firms seeking transformative insights. I'm your host, Lawrence Whittam, and with each episode, we'll uncover key insights, best practices, and invaluable resources tailored for CPAs. From trending strategies to diving deep into outsourcing and offshoring, our experts will help in all areas of your business.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Business Beyond Borders. I've got a very special guest here who has also had me on their podcast, and I'm sure you've been on multiple episodes there in terms of growing your firm, and also Jetpack Workflow is their CAS workflow software, which I'm sure you're very well aware of. I know that it's a very popular one, and even met each other at a couple of events recently, and there were some fanboy people in the crowd and stuff at Profit First, which was pretty funny. So then I got to know about your podcast, and like I said, a bit more further along the game than myself. So I'm taking notes from you a lot of the times. So this is David, and do you want to give a little bit of an introduction about you and yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate the kind words about the platform and the software. So I'm David Cristello. I'm the founder and CEO of Jetpack Workflow, or a cloud-based platform that helps CAS departments, tax firms, bookkeeping, payroll firms really take all their services, standardize it so it's aligned and in the cloud. We help them automate things like recurring deadlines, and then we help you track it in a very quick and simple way so these critical deadlines don't fall through the cracks. We've been doing this for about 8 years. We've been on the Inc. 5000. We support north of 1,000 accounting firms, primarily in North America, but all over the world. And, we're excited for the future of workflow and kind of where the profession's going. Like you mentioned, in addition to that, we're big fans of putting a spotlight on people that are doing amazing things in the space, including yourself. So we've been running the Growing Your Firm podcast for, 5 or 6 years. It's now nearing 1 million downloads, 250 plus episodes. Wow. We really talk to people about what they're doing to thrive in the modern economy. And so we talk about marketing and workflow and M&A and sales and everything around growing a firm. Team management's obviously a big one, talent acquisition, talent retention. And we've been having a lot of fun with that. And we create a lot of content in and outside of the podcast, including books and webinars and what have you. So that's a little bit about what we do. But every day we wake up and we think about, the accounting leader, the accounting professional, and how to make sure that they are more productive and profitable.
So can you share, I know that you've been working a lot with smaller firms typically, right? And you've sort of transitioned upstream essentially to some of the larger CAS practices now within some quite large firms. Now, can you tell us a little bit about that transition, right? I mean, what you've seen, especially when it comes to technology and AI and just automation in general, like, because from our conversations, I mean, you've seen a huge amount of movement, which is part of the reason why you sort of went towards that as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the smaller firms have the advantage in that they are very nimble. So something comes out, whether it's innovation around pricing or packaging, or it's innovation in technology, they can typically adapt very quickly. If they see niches that are growing very quickly, they can kind of position themselves there very soon or very quickly. The downside is that because they can move so fast that they can chase shiny objects all day long. this niche is interesting, and now this tool is interesting, and this pricing model is interesting, and this new job board's interesting, maybe I should post here. And you're kind of not sure. You could be very scattered very quickly as a small firm. And so we've seen firms kind of get through that barrier by focusing on one thing at a time and tackling one problem at a time and then moving on to the next one. But it's also very hard because you don't have a lot of data. You don't have a lot of signals on what's the specific step you should move into. For larger firms, they are typically more methodical. They are more strategic. When they invest in something, they do so with a lot of groundwork that has been laid down. Having said that, there's a lot more infrastructure that they have to navigate when they're launching something like a CAS practice. And so, for example, clients or client acquisition of a CAS department that's being launched inside of a mid-sized firm, you know, can oftentimes be pretty seamless because you are getting referrals. The tax or audit department kind of know of clients that have been looking for this service. As a firm, you might have been referring this service out to other practices, but now you're pulling this in-house. So you have a stream of clients, and because you have an established business, you probably have an understanding of niches that really, really work well for your firm. So you have all that to your advantage. You probably have, you know, some understanding of where your margins should be. You have talent pipeline, you have HR infrastructure, but then the challenge is, you know, CAS is fundamentally different from other services that you're offering. If for no other reason that one, you're going to have a ton of recurring deadlines and due dates. It's, you know, on monthly schedules, on weekly schedules, on biweekly schedules, on quarterly schedules. So the quantity of things to track expands exponentially relative to other departments. And then the additional facet is your pricing model might need to be adjusted. If you haven't done fixed fee, you probably need to go into fixed fee. If you haven't done value, you might want to explore value-based billing. And so you have all of these tailwinds to make you move faster as a CAS department in a larger firm. But then where you have headwinds is your technology stack is maybe harder to get approved, you know, for the infrastructure of the firm. You know, if you're going to innovate on pricing and packaging, then it raises fundamental questions around what do you do with timesheets and time tracking? Now, you don't need to get rid of them, but they change. They, you know, they fundamentally change. And so there's people change management that needs to happen, both in how you advocate for different pieces of technology, but then also how you package, price, and then manage the fulfillment of those services. And so those are very, you know, distinct needs that happen in CAS practices. And it just takes them longer to kind of navigate because they have all this infrastructure, good and bad, that they need to work through in order to launch the CAS service.
Yeah, and I was going to say, you mentioned it right at the end, that change management. I mean, that's just a piece inside larger firms that it takes more time. It has to be thought about methodically. It's a lot of effort compared to, like you said, the nimble small firm that really, I mean, they have to learn it themselves, right? Maybe you could teach a couple of employees, but not a whole division of team members, right? So now what are you seeing from the automation side of things, right? When it comes to the CAS department. And again, I think this is an element as to why it's become so popular within firms as well, right? Because it has got more automated. It's become easier. It's not as people and manual focused, whereas it previously was. And that's where a lot of these tasks and responsibilities, firms wouldn't even want to touch with a 10-foot pole. They would say, no, I mean, hire internally because it's more cost effective. If I have to bill you for this type of stuff, it's not going to be worth it. Right. So how has that shift? What do you see as the shift?
Yeah, well, you can kind of look at the fulfillment of CAS services, and you can kind of see, you know, pretty much every part of it, there's some piece of technology that's trying to automate it or make it much more efficient. So you pair that with a, you know, market understanding that fixed fee at a minimum is the right pricing strategy. So you're driving efficiencies, but you're keeping your price point, you know, kind of the same, or you're increasing it incrementally year over year to keep up with inflation. Then you have a really nice high margin service that you can kind of bring to the market. And so whether it's actually doing the accounting work and trying to drive, you know, some percentage of auto categorization or auto pulling information from the clients, you know, into it, and Xero both launching kind of these assistants within their platforms as well. So you can retrieve information even faster from a reporting or CFO advisory perspective. So the actual accounting work, every single day, there seems to be a new little innovation that streamlines these services a little bit more. And then on the admin end, you know, this is where kind of we play, you know, a lot of cases, you're seeing the admin function become more efficient. So whether that's setting up the work, whether it's setting up the recurrence of work, or it's creating the handoffs and the triggers and the automations between team members, or it's the automation of tracking the status or the stage work is in, you know, it's kind of your virtual AI project manager. We see a lot of momentum happening in that space. And so, you know, every part of that fulfillment process should have a technology answer, even if you don't implement it today. I think it's really important, right? You can kind of look at the stack. You could see, okay, to fulfill X service, there's 8 things. And any place that says, I mean, maybe this is an oversimplification, but any place that says spreadsheet, you're like, well, there's probably room for efficiency. Or any place that says calendar or email or what have you, doesn't mean you need to run an entirely new technology stack, but you can actually build a technology roadmap based on what you're seeing. And as a side note, you know, sometimes we'll work with these CAS departments and you know, I really applaud them because they have to run up and down the chain of command to get approval. And sometimes as they run up the chain, there's a blocker, which is like, well, we don't want your department to run on a different tool than other departments. So we're using X here, so you should use X there. And then what happens is, you know, that's the official order. But then guess what? Everybody uses a spreadsheet that sits in a silo that is like shared via email or in the cloud, or they do something in Drive and they share that across Google Drive. And so, you know, I want to emphasize that tools will be solving these problems, whether or not, you know, it's ordained from the top that you can use it, or it's a spreadsheet that kind of sits in somebody's desktop file and that's what they use to track. But going back to what I said, you know, you look at this tech stack, you look at every piece of the client journey, from communication to fulfillment, and then, you know, circling back to know when it's done. There's a piece of technology that should advance, should make more efficient, that should drive margins every step of the way. And that's how you build out your technology roadmap for CAS.
And now, so that's one of the first steps, I would assume, right? Is that technology roadmap and really putting that in place. And I say the same thing from the outsourcing perspective. Is there's 99% of firms that are outsourcing have nothing documented, have no roadmap, have no idea where they're going to from that perspective. So it's funny, it's the same thing for the technologies. You don't have to do everything day one, but you have to have an idea. You have to put it in place so that now you can start taking steps and gradually go through these areas. Because again, as you said, I mean, it takes time to even then learn and implement a new software, right? So you can't do everything at the same time. Now, are you... from the Jetpack workflow perspective, have you found now coming into larger firms that you're also having to spend a lot more time during that integration piece than you would with, let's say, a small firm? Like, are you having to really educate on like this technology roadmap and say, okay, this is where we would fit in here. Now you've got to go back and you've got to figure this out before even really it's worth plugging us in, right? Or how do those conversations, how have you sort of set this up for the larger firms?
Yeah, I'll take it in a slightly different direction. I think by the time they typically come to us, they have made a decision, whether consciously or, you know, or you know, they just couldn't take it anymore. Is it part of a roadmap, or it's like, we cannot have another month like the one we just had. We need to start finding a solution. So either by strategy or through pure pain, you know, they have started to look for a solution. We come up on their radar, but I do think there's a lot of questions of, you know, CAS is the fastest growing service in the large majority of firms. So then you have the conundrum. We're growing so quickly. We're trying to find people or tools or a mixture of both to do fulfillment, but I need to get a handle on everything so we're efficient and things aren't falling through the cracks. And so we're going to find a tool. But then once you find a tool, it's like, well, who's going to set it up and who's going to train our team? And I think this is, you know, a material adjustment from smaller firms that may have different levels of growth rates. When we interact with CAS, nearly all of them have some level of a high growth rate. So setup and team training is mission critical. It's as important as the software. So, you know, whether we come hand in hand with them and there's an internal champion that helps the build out, or we just do all the build out for them, which we often do now in CAS. We'll just do your full build out, give us your spreadsheets, send us snapshots of your legacy system, we'll implement it or whatever you're using. And then we'll be very methodical about rolling it out to your team. Now, depending on your team size or team structure, we might roll it out all at once, or we might roll it out to a specific site, you know, where you have many different sites across the country. Okay, let's start here. Let's gain our champions. We feel like they're the right fit for a variety of reasons. You know, they adapt to technology faster. They have the greatest pain point. Maybe they have the smallest team. I don't know what it is, but we identify potentially a group that can really ignite this use case. And then we can kind of rinse, repeat across the nation or across the world, depending on the department. But that's really dependent on the DNA of that firm. If they have multiple sites across the US, we might treat that as, let's start with one and move to the other. If they have 20, 30, 40 people all in, you know, a site in Chicago, we could just roll that out all at once. That is a little bit of a, you know, solution exploration once we get into that phase in the makeup of their CAS department.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned just with the different sites as well, because I was talking to a managing partner of quite a large firm the other day, and he mentioned the same thing in terms of they've got about 20 different sites, and again, I think 8 different softwares. across the board. And again, not specifically to CAS, but I think it was tax. He was like, yeah, I'm pretty sure we were using out of the tech stack for their tax stuff. It's like 8 different softwares across about 20 different offices. And he was like, we know we need to like get everything together so we can be efficient, but it's difficult. Because again, that change management aspect is where are they doing it first? And again, I think some of these offices came from acquisitions and things like that. So the culture, they were also working on culture and so many different aspects. So it's funny you mentioned that side of it.
Acquisitions bring up a whole slew of integration challenges. And I'm not just talking about technology, but, you know, just people and culturally. I mean, mm-hmm. hopefully there is, you know, some material overlap in cultures when you acquire it in some way. I mean, there's, you know, it's not 100% the same culture, but hopefully it's 70-80% shares a lot of the same values. I mean, that certainly gives you a leg up as in the integration process. But the technology piece is really important. You know, there's a saying when you acquire something, which is like, you don't break what you buy. So you buy this asset and you buy this process, buy this service, and if you rip technology out and then, you know, drive inefficiencies, drive down margins, well, you just broke it. You just broke, you know, this thing that you paid for an X level multiple. And so, you know, it is something you want to be sensitive about, you know, when you're making a change. And, you know, certainly you just have to weigh the pros and cons, right? Of having 8 different departments run 8 different, I don't know, workflow systems versus, you know, having a single one. But, you know, the good news is it doesn't have to happen all at once. This could be a, you know, a 3-year initiative to kind of roll, you know, if you have 8 departments or 10 departments, you know, every 6 months you're introducing this to a new one and you're tweaking and learning as you go. It's something that doesn't happen, you know, in a quarter. You know, you can move everybody, but you also want to make sure that the move is for a great strategic reason. You know, if you know, 8 different departments are using 8 different, you know, screen recording tools, is that a really big deal? Like, I'm not sure, right? I mean, it is maybe because your subscriptions are going to go wild. It's hard to track everything. There's tools that help you track this. You know, when it comes to other tools, if you're able to centralize things or standardize the data format, because we'll work with a lot of firms and they'll say, look, because we're all using the same workflow system, things are standardized. And so if we want to run custom reporting, then
hey, David, you there? Hey, you there? I see you frozen on my screen.
It just totally shut down. I didn't hit X.
That's weird.
On my end. I don't even have like Zoom up. I'm sorry about that. I mean, fortunately, I guess you have to edit now. I don't know how much
editing. No, you're good. You're good. So I've got the time anyway. 24.
I don't know if you want to hit record and let's just start a new question, and there's probably some place you can cut me off on the prior one.
Yeah, I think so. It's still recording, so I can just literally cut out. It's okay, like from 24:30 to 25:30. I literally like turned, coughed, and then came back, and then you were frozen. Like, you're still on my screen right now. Like, I see like a second.
I see two of me. Yeah. I don't understand it. So,
Well, hopefully that doesn't put you off too much because I'm not going to. No.
How do you want to pick it back up?
So, what? So it cut you off where it said. So. Okay. Well, I'll pick it. I'll just get it started again. We'll talk a little bit about the AI, like AI side of things, in terms of like just ChatGPT stuff like that. Now, if you're good with that.
Good. Yep.
All right, so it's 26:15. Now, David, when we talk about ChatGPT, obviously, and AI, when we're coming back to that side of things, obviously, that's such a very popular popular discussion point for many people, like, and how we use that within firms, and just, I mean, what's your thought on where we're even going with AI right now? I mean, because it's been developing so quickly. And again, that's just one area, right, that people are now building thousands of different applications off the back of it. But can you give us just a bit of your insight, again, being in the space, being in the know-how for this?
Yeah. And by the way, what perfect timing for this to come up. I mean, we're going to see doom and gloom headlines. I've been seeing doom and gloom headlines since the day we started building for this profession. Since the day. And yeah. This is just the latest iteration of that, in my opinion. Now, is it going to be transformative? Absolutely. And so I think, AI from a productivity perspective is going to be pretty amazing. And it's seemingly every other month, there's a major update or release in AI. And so I would say from a productivity perspective, I think this world in which AI becomes a true kind of admin assistant or AI project manager is the future, right? And so if you find yourself constantly checking statuses, chasing down clients, trying to understand what the team is working on, trying to hold your team accountable to the things they agreed to for their goals, for the week, for the month, trying to understand client satisfaction, trying to run basic client triage and Q&A with clients. I mean, I think AI is going to be a big efficiency advantage for accounting firms. And just the other day, there's a report that there's 340,000 job shortages in accounting.
Yeah.
Certainly, thinking globally is going to help. And that's what everybody's doing, or at least everybody's thinking about, right? So we have this team onshore. How do we go nearshore, offshore? How do we augment our team? Obviously, that's your world. And it's really, really important to think of your firm as a global firm, even if you serve locally. You know, the next step is, how are you integrating AI into your practice to drive efficiency? Now, there is a lot of noise in the space. There's a lot of noise in the space. I talked about smaller firms earlier having shiny object syndrome. I mean, this is probably ringing many bells for a lot of people. And I would say probably the most important thing to do right now is allow yourself to tinker with this technology. Open up ChatGPT, ask questions, open up DALL-E, create images. It doesn't have to be so accounting focused, but I would say open up some of these fundamental tools and just tinker with it. Just play with it. So often transformative innovations feel like toys kind of early on. They don't really feel like, well, this kind of works for this kind of gimmicky thing, but it's not really going to work. Well, guess what? These technologies do mature. They will become fine-tuned. Whether that happens in 3 months, 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, I don't know, but it will not stop. And it's a really great time to just tinker with it. And I could say, obviously as a company, we're thinking about how we invest in the AI project manager kind of mentality and how we intelligently surface things, nudge things, create drafts for managers to review. We're thinking of all these things as we build out new versions of the platform. But I also just think in your personal life, download the mobile app of ChatGPT and have a conversation with it. Turn on audio. It's very eye-opening. Just do very basic conversations, right? So the other day we were asking about meal plans and we're having a conversation about meal plans. I opened it up. My son started talking to it. I didn't have to train him how to talk to it. I didn't say, oh, this is a thing and this is how you talk to it. It's, the innovation here is it took something that was zero and ones that had to be programmed and it made it entirely conversational. And, my young son was just having conversations with it about, unicorns and animals in the woods. And, he is making poems for him. And he just natively understood the technology, which is very eye-opening. And so whether you have kids and you want to kind of play around with there, or you open up, again, DALL-E is the image interface in ChatGPT. Of course, every Google has this, Microsoft has this. Ask it to create an image for you. I mean, if you haven't done some fundamental tinkering with AI, why not? Just spend literally 10 or 15 minutes and just become familiar with this. And the example I think makes the most sense, or the analogy that makes the most sense here is, this is like Microsoft Excel in the 80s or 90s. It kind of felt like, what am I going to use this for? Like, I don't know, it's just a table and whatever. And it's going to advance. And I think the people that, start to tinker with it now and really become I'll use this in quotations, experts now, it will be like Excel in the 90s, or as, you know, spreadsheets in the 90s. It will be transformative for the productivity of our business. Is it entirely there today? No, not quite. I think there's some interesting use cases. There's interesting things that are showing up. I could tell you for our own business, and this maybe is controversial, I don't know, for our own business and our own customer support software, the platform we use rolled out a AI interface where they're going to take first stab at in a conversation manner, not just surfacing little articles, but they will converse back and forth with the user. And we pay that platform $1 for every accurate, successful conversation that is conducted. And right now, from the data we fed it from our knowledge base and our software, it closes about 50% of the conversations. Now, this is software. We have a ton of knowledge base articles. The guardrails and the paradigms are defined. Tax is significantly more complicated. So I don't want to say, oh yeah, you can make, you know, tax resolution or tax answers 50% of the time. No, that's not the case. But again, tinker with this. There are some very interesting use cases. And when you start to see the ROI of it, it is really eye-opening what it could become.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And it's funny you mentioned about your kids with ChatGPT, but it's so my kids, they've even just with the Google Homes and the Alexas and stuff, like they're constantly asking, hey, can you make some animal noises? What sound does this animal make, et cetera? And like, and again, just having the conversation with it, right? But literally just sat there talking to it. And again, they do all the broadcast. They know how to broadcast and send it around the places. So it's funny how quickly they learn.
Yeah. And look, the future is not that far away where, you know, we talked about this a little bit a couple of weeks ago where, you know, you can imagine a world in which you have some sort of admin AI in your firm, and what does it do? What helps you with project management? It helps you chase down clients. It helps keep the team accountable. Helps surface wins and good things that are happening in the firm. I'm not saying it fully replaces an admin, but certainly replaces a percentage of the work that they're doing. And that frees them up to do other things, maybe support business development, maybe support professional development. I don't know. But you know, you can imagine a world in which you have this AI agent that is kind of perpetually doing a lot of different work in your firm, and you're going to name them something, Ted, Bob, Sue, I don't know. And they're going to become, you know, a quasi part of your team, you know, like, well, who took care of it? We're going to get sick of saying AI bot took care of it. No, we're going to call it something. We're going to say Finn took care of it, or Ted took care of it, or Sue took, I don't know, insert a name. And that's where I think things are going to get kind of interesting, because you're going to open up, whether it's Intuit, or you're going to open up a workflow tool like ours, and you're just going to see the username, you know, the, you know, Ted bot or whatever you call this thing. And it's going to really start to feel like it's part of your team. And I think that's going to be a really wild moment. And we're not that far away. There was a release, I think it was earlier this year, of this hardware device. There's an iPhone looking thing called Rabbit. And Rabbit's innovation, they dropped it at CES. And the Rabbit innovation was, you could prompt this device. You could say, I'm traveling to London, you know, help me book my travel. Well, yes, it would surface, you know, it would ask you what dates, it would surface the right hotels. It would also start to look at cars. It would look at local restaurants. It would ask you, you know, is this the right car? Do you want me to book this type of car, a different car? Great. It would say, hey, you know, do you need to eat out every day? Yes. We'll start to then try to look for reservations and make all the reservations. And so it's much more than automating to one specific app, but then how it works through and how it connects 4, 5, 6, 7 different apps. And so you can imagine a world in which there's some interface in your general ledger. There is some kind of updating inside of your workflow system. Maybe there's something that's going on in client communications, and you, the firm owner, will get to determine what level of review you want to put on all those steps, right? So you will create the QA for the AI agent. But a lot of the early lifting, I think, could happen at the AI agent level. Not today, but I don't think in the not so distant future is inconceivable. I think that will happen, you know, sooner than we think.
That's funny. And again, even with the people side and the offshore, how you talk about the controls element so much in terms of it works, but you've got to make sure there's going to be things that come up that are problems. There's going to be things that are wrong. But put controls there. You can make sure you, like, technology is built around controls so that you actually have a framework that's there. So that's funny. So as we wrap up, David, do you want to give everybody just an idea where they can find you? And again, if they want to learn a bit more, like they can obviously visit your website, which we can post, and the and we'll post your podcast here. But do you want to just let them know what's best for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you have any interest in the software, if you're using a legacy system, a spreadsheet, or a generic tool, and you just want something a little bit more, something that fits your firm a little bit better, we do have a free trial of the software. It's jetpackworkflow.com. You can look at demos, you can look at how it works, or you could just spin up a free trial and see if it's a good fit or book a one-on-one call with us. So everything's at jetpackworkflow.com. Like you said, we have the Growing Your Firm podcast. So if you're not in the market yet for workflow software, but you need a second podcast that you want to follow along and listen to, the Growing Your Firm podcast, we put out an episode every other week. And again, that's on the footer of our website. You know, we've published books, all the material. You know, if it's non-software, you can typically find it in the resource section or at the footer of the page. There's a lot of good resources.
Perfect. No, thank you for coming on, David. Really appreciate it. And we're going to wrap up here. I hope everybody enjoyed, and we'll see you on the next episode of Business Beyond Borders.
Thanks, Lawrence.
Thank you for tuning in to Business Beyond Borders. I'm Lawrence Whittam, and it's been a pleasure bringing you impactful insights tailored for the modern CPA firm. Remember, the world of accounting is vast and ever-evolving, and we're here to navigate it together. For more resources and episodes, don't forget to subscribe and reach out to our experts. Until next time, keep pushing the boundaries of your business and explore the limitless possibilities beyond borders.